thank you for joining us for Life and Taxes with tax attorney Andrew Foster of Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law. Call in now with your tax questions at 800-818-2255 or locally at 247-7282 or 353-4674.
And welcome to Life and Taxes with Andrew Foster from Harvell & Collins. Good morning, Andrew.
Good morning, Ben.
What are we talking about today?
Well, Ben, last week we got to the conclusion of our case.
Yes.
But we didn't quite have enough time to get to the lessons that we should learn from it.
Okay. So let's recap.
So let's recap what we went through last week. And last week we really went and talked about how there may be a new type of bequest in North Carolina called the indirect bequest. So let's go through
it,
what...
It kind of made sense, too, as you were talking about it. I mean, we can see how this happens.
Yeah. So let's go through the types of bequests that we knew about prior to this ruling by the Court of Appeals that was just released last week. First of all, when you're trying to give your property in a will, there's certain ways that we can do it. One way is called a specific bequest. And that way, Ben, is where you allocate a particular asset to a particular beneficiary.
It's very specific.
Yes, very specific. I mentioned last week, 2018 Corvette to Ben. That's a very clear, specific bequest in a will. So that's one way that you can dispose of your property, you know, through your estate planning document, through your will. Another way is a demonstrative bequest, and this is where a precise distributions of a particular asset. We talked about 100 shares of GE stock or $10,000 from my Wells Fargo account. So we're talking about a specific asset. We're talking about if you give a portion of it, you can allocate it back to an asset, and that's called a demonstrative bequest.
And both those types have their issues because they may the facts may change.
That's exactly right.
And then they might instill a fight where you didn't intend to.
Exactly. We mentioned, you know, you sell your car, you change to a new car. Now that bequest is abated. We mentioned that, you know, the stocks all the time, you know, you have a merger, GE turns into another company, for instance.
Or you mentioned Wachovia.
Wachovia, exactly. That's a really good example. Yeah. Wachovia becomes Wells Fargo. You know, there are rules about tracing back, but, you know, you get into sticky situations when you're leaving that specific of a bequest. The next is just a general bequest, and this is just a precise dollar amount, but it's not designated to a particular asset. So, you know, just $10,000 to Ben. We don't say where the money's going to come from. We just say, look, when you put everything together,
right,
you start to funnel it down, Ben gets $10,000, you know, out of the estate. Basically.
Generally, that has less problems.
Yeah, generally less problems there because we're not saying it has to be a specific asset. What I will say is that sometimes it's not the greatest thing in the world because we don't know how much money you're going to end up with at the end of the day.
Right.
So, you know, if you leave a large general bequest,
right,
that could end up being your entire estate potentially.
If you say percentages instead, is that also a general bequest?
Yeah. So percentages we're looking at, that's where we get to the next bequest, which is residual beneficiaries.
Oh, residual. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah. So residual bequest is basically any and all remaining property where you haven't done the first three that I spoke of, specific, demonstrative, or general. So this is where you say 25% to Ben, you know, 25% to Joe, 25% to Bob, 25% to Ann.
Right.
And so that's what we call residuary beneficiaries. And that's a very easy way to do things because then, you know, although we may not know what you're going to end up with at the end of the day, Ben, we know that each of these people are going to get equal shares, 25% each, for instance.
Kenzie gets the 1989 Yugo.
There
you go. That's what it comes out.
As long as I get something.
All right. Okay.
So those were our bequests that we went through last week. And then we talked about how the Court of Appeals had a conundrum before them. And this was a case that was decided last week. I mentioned out of Cumberland County where I'm from, out of Fayetteville. And, you know, we always get these holographic will cases. And that, what that means, Ben, is a will in someone's own handwriting.
Right.
Signed by them. And
which, you know, doesn't require notary, right?
No notary. Yeah, just you have to have witnesses to attest that it's your
signature.
It is the signature and is the person's handwriting. And this individual, Mr. Ernest Brewington Sr., he wrote his will, and as part of that, he says, pay the note at BB&T that's in my sister Peggy's name. So that was the direction that was given to his executors in this
particular case. He wants to pay off somebody's house loan or mortgage or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I mentioned Peggy comes forward and says, okay, executors, here's my loan at BB&T through various, you know, discovery during the case. They determined that was her only loan at BB&T, and it was about $83,000 that she had there. And the estate took the position that BB&T is a creditor of the estate. This is not a bequest to Peggy in any way, because the money would ultimately go to BB&T. It would not go to Peggy.
It's like he's assuming the debt.
Exactly.
The estate says we're assuming the debt.
You got it,
so,
Ben.
It gets in line with the others.
So they're saying it's a creditor. And oh, by the way, creditor, you didn't file your claim in time. So we're denying that you get anything from this particular estate.
But how would they know they were a creditor? I think that's probably part of the reasoning here that the court says how they couldn't have filed. They wouldn't have known.
You got it. So, I mean, that's one of the reasoning in their analysis. They say, look, you know, this is really not – I mean, you didn't – number one, if you just sent them a notice and said, hey, by the way, you're a creditor of this estate, you had the opportunity to file a claim, maybe that would have changed the facts here.
But
I seriously doubt it.
Yeah.
Because what the court decided ultimately is that this was an indirect bequest to Peggy. So one of the first times we've ever seen that term, I think, according to lawyers on the message boards that were on, the first time we've seen the indirect bequest distinction by the Court of Appeals. And they said, no. Peggy is an indirect beneficiary of this estate because her loan is going to get paid off with BB&T. So she's a beneficiary.
Yeah, oh, you bet.
The money just doesn't go to her. It goes to BB&T. But she's not. That's not a creditor issue. She's actually a beneficiary under this particular estate. And there we go, the birth of the indirect bequest as far as North Carolina is concerned.
So let me go back to the different types then. Do they have priorities?
Yeah.
Are one over another?
Yeah, so the residual is basically at the end of the line.
Okay.
But, you know, if you left a specific bequest, a demonstrative bequest, a general bequest, you know, your demonstrative would potentially come out first. Your specific would be whatever the item is, and the demonstrative, if it comes from that particular item and it's there, you know, then the general, then the residuary. So that's kind of your general
order. So where does this one going to fall?
Yeah, where's it going to fall? I don't know. I would say probably towards the general bequest, because in this particular instance, you know, you're looking at the whole pile of money, and then you're determining where we're going to go with it.
Because it's not going to designate where it's going to come from.
Correct. So. That's exactly right. We're not designating it from a particular source, so it just kind of falls.
I can see this happening, though. Somebody says, hey, I want to pay off my kids' student loans.
Yeah, and that's a good example, Ben. You know, I want to pay off my kids' student loans. You know, and so that's where I wanted to take it to the program to this morning, which is how would we accomplish this goal?
Uh-huh.
Okay? You know, Ernest chose to handwrite his own will, and he ends up in court over it.
Or
we don't want our clients in court over this particular matter, or put their beneficiaries in court.
Right.
So if our goal here is to get the money to sister to pay off the loan, or if our goal out there is to get money to kids or grandkids to pay off their student loans, how can we do it? You know, what can we do? So, you know, obviously, there's different ways. One way would be, Ben, is, okay, we know the loan in this particular case was about $82,000. Why don't we do a general bequest to sister for just $80,000? So in this particular regard, she would be obviously we know general bequests are allowed. They've been there forever. So we say $80,000 to sister.
Yeah.
And sister gets $80,000 in her hot little hand. What's the problem with that?
Yeah, the problem is that she may not use it for that.
That's exactly right.
That would thwart the intention of the testator.
That's right. She may take that $80,000 and go to Vegas for the weekend, and boom, the BB&T loan is still sitting intact, and the person's intent, what they wanted to happen, which is to get that loan removed from the sister's life,
to save her house,
doesn't happen.
Maybe.
Maybe save the house. So that's probably not the best way. But at least we would have avoided court if we had gone that way.
Right.
Okay. Number two is clear language in the will. You know, here we go. Pay off the note at BB&T. You know, here we go. We say clear language that you're supposed to pay off the sister's loan at BB&T, but sister is to be treated as a beneficiary of this particular estate.
Right.
That's better.
Or even would you even go as specific as the mortgage on 123 Elm Street?
Totally.
Yeah.
As specific as you can get to show what your intent is, because remember, when we're looking at this from a court perspective, we're trying to figure out what the testator really wanted in this particular regard. And I think it's pretty clear in the court's reasoning. He wanted his sister's loan paid off.
Mm-hmm.
But the more clear you can be with your language, loan number, you know,
right,
the mortgage,
right.
I mean, everything like that, that would be beneficial, and then make it clear that the sister is to be treated as a beneficiary of this estate. That's better, but we're still not there yet. What I think the best solution would be in this particular regard, Ben, would be to leave, leave the money in trust, and then have a direction to the trustee to pay off the loan for the sister's benefit. What that is that gives very clear instructions. We can put the money into a trust document. The trustee then can be given specific directions that sometimes it's not as easy to do in a will, where it's, you know, being scrutinized by the clerk of court and maybe they won't go along with it. The trust.
The trust could say, for example, is it to be paid off all at once or is it to be paid off incrementally?
You got
it. Could be a number of things.
Could
it be invested before it's paid off? So the trust would have a lot more.
The trust gives you a lot more flexibility, a lot more leeway. And really, I mean, I think here it would have been the ultimate solution to this problem. And I think any of those, any of our listeners out there who are thinking, maybe I want my kids to get their student loans paid off, that's a very logical way to handle that type of situation.
Because, again, a trust can handle the potential divorce that might happen, a number of other things.
That's right.
Address it that the will simply isn't going to handle.
That's right. And the other big, huge lesson here, Ben, is choosing your executor.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? We've got the kids of Mr. Brewington, who are the beneficiary, who are the co-executors of this estate. And they stand to gain.
Right.
If they deny this, the sister's a beneficiary.
Yeah.
So it's in their pecuniary interest to not go forward with this bequest to pay off this loan.
Mm-hmm.
So remember, pick impartial, trusted executors.
Okay, there you go. If you want to get more advice, you can call on the folks at Harvell & Collins Attorneys at Law, and you can reach them at 726-9050-1107 Bridges Street in Morehead City.